Welcome to the Exceptional Sales Leader Podcast with Darren Mitchell. If you're a sales leader looking to take your leadership to a whole new level, then this is the podcast for you. We'll be exploring tips, techniques, and strategies to help you take your leadership to the exceptional level and allow you to enjoy more money, more meaning, and better sales results. Welcome back to the Exceptional Sales Leader Podcast. This is Darren Mitchell and very pleased to have on the podcast today, Barbara Weaver-Smith, all the way from Scottsdale, Arizona. How are you, Barbara?
I'm doing great. So nice to be with you today, Darren.
Likewise. We're just talking before we press record and you mentioned that you've got a lot of fans in Australia, which will be great. So hopefully all of those fans, when we put something on LinkedIn that we've spoken today, we'll be jumping on board and listening to you. Now, you're the founder and CEO of The Whale Hunters. Now, is it The Whale Hunters Institute or?
The Whale Hunters Institute is our new program. The company is The Whale Hunters, Inc., and we just launched The Whale Hunters Institute.
Fantastic. So very much looking forward to this conversation because a lot of my listeners are into business-to-business sales, and many of them have to deal with very complex situations. And if you have been in B2B sales before, you know that sales is not necessarily simple because we have many, many different stakeholders that we need to manage. So before we jump into a conversation around around all of this, love to know a little bit of your background, because I do know you've got a PhD in English and you were a writing professor. But really fascinated that how do we go from being a PhD in English and being a writing professor to now running Whale Hunters and focused on complex selling?
Well, who knew? I mean, I didn't plan that out. I was at the university for quite a few years, and then I had the opportunity to become president of a statewide not-for-profit organization in Indiana that was all about civic engagement. Mm-hmm. And bringing people together with community resources for arts and culture activities. So that's where I got the big deal bug, because I had to raise money for one thing. And I had to work with a lot of people from different groups, and they all kind of spoke different languages and they had different objectives. And so I became kind of a skilled facilitator of things like that. And I loved doing the big deals and the complexity of it. And I got tired of doing it in the not-for-profit world after a few years. So I left that, and that's when I started my company. That was in 1998, I mean, a long time ago. And so for several years then, I mostly worked for those kinds of organizations, you know, in the not-for-profit world or in multiple organizations coming together to do things. And then I got, it just was kind of a natural expansion into the world of small and mid-sized business because it was such a good fit. Mm. And so we created the Whale Hunters brand in 2006, and I've run with that ever since.
Wow. So it might be an obvious question, but what was it about the non-for-profit that you kind of got sick of?
Oh, well, things move slowly. You have to raise money. You have a board, and the people on your board are, my people were brilliant business people, but they take off their business hat, they put on their not-for-profit hat, they're afraid to make money. Yeah. So it's just, I just like it better, you know, in the for-profit environment, really, doing similar things.
Yeah. Love it. Now, another obvious question I've got, when I was reading your bio and having a look through your website, it's a really fascinating name for the company, The Whale Hunters. So can you just give us some, is there a metaphor there? Is there a specific meaning? Yeah, love you to expand on that.
Sure. It's very deliberately derived from how the Inuit people hunted whales centuries ago. And the ones that we've studied in particular lived on the far northwest coast of Alaska. And, you know, they were ordinary people. They were small people. And the whale is an enormous creature, the biggest creature on Earth. And I think they found that they could hunt caribou and feed their family for a week, or they could fish for dinner. But if they could get a whale, then they could feed their whole village for a year. That's kind of the analogy. And the more we learned about the way they went about it, it's a great kind of metaphor background for a whale hunting company, because they were very collaborative. They taught their children from when they were very young how to do things. They spent a huge amount of time preparing, because the whales were only there, you know, swimming past them in the early spring. Yeah. And so it's just been such a fun metaphor. We have great respect for them. We don't ever make fun of it. You know, it was really serious business for them, and it's really serious business for us too. But yeah, people love the analogy. It makes it so much easier to do a change process in your company if you have something different and fun to deal with, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then, do you use that as a like a symbol to say, we're going out, we're going hunting for the big whale, which is your big complex deal?
Exactly. And we have a process model. It's scout, hunt, harvest. And inside those three big stages are like three phases in each process. So it's a 9-phase process altogether. And it takes you from, it takes your company, your whole company, because whale hunting is not just the sales department. It's everybody. Sales and marketing, it's legal, it's operations, it's customer experience. So when we work with companies, we try to get as many people involved as we can. And so this is a methodology that helps you start with identifying what are the qualities of the ideal whale for you. And by whale, we mean a big company, but specifically we talk about a company that could give you a deal that's 10 to 20 times bigger than your current average deal. So it's a very much a growth model.
Fascinating. And what you said leading into that was really, really enlightening, in that you need to have sales, marketing, operations, legal, everybody within the organization on board, because my experience being in B2B sales for many years is often the salesperson or the sales team are the ones who are ultimately responsible for driving the deal. And there's a lot of internal competition, whether that be for recognition or resource allocation.
Yeah.
That when things don't go right, it's the salesperson's fault.
Right.
And it sounds to me that in communities that hunt whales, it's not just the hunter that is responsible. Everybody plays a part.
Exactly. Well, sometimes we've used the analogy, the comparison between whale hunting and buffalo hunting, because the buffalo hunter was one guy out on a horse, you know, with a spear, and he was going to fling that spear at the buffalo, and then everybody else took care of it afterwards. But it wasn't as collaborative event. But this on the Umiak, the boat that the Inuit people use to go out after whales, there's 8 people on the boat, and they 100 people have prepared them to do this, you know.
Yes.
So it's and it is truly an analogy, because that's how you have to approach real success in large account sales. It has to be a team effort.
Well, it does. And there's a lot of, and I like the fact you've got 3 stages as well, the scouting, the hunting, and then the harvesting, because for most complex deals in large organizations, the sales cycle can be quite elongated, which means we have to do a lot of planning. It's no longer a case of, well, you got to hit your sales target by the end of this quarter, so just go out and if there's a whale coming by, just throw the big harpoon and hopefully you catch it.
You know, that's such a good point, because we have to, and you're all about sales leadership. Leaders have to understand they can't deal with these short-term targets if they want to be successful. If they push the sales team to close deals because it's the end of a quarter or the end of a year, they can blow millions and millions of dollars of opportunity just in one meeting.
So just on that point and the work that you do, because I know you do a lot of work with some big organizations that are in very big complex sales, how often do you come up against that? The pressure that sales leaders and therefore sales teams are under to hit that short-term objective versus the organization that has the patience and the courage to say, you know what, we might have to forego our short-term incentive or a short-term target because this is far too important.
Yeah. Well, we always start with, we work with leadership. It's the CEO or the owner. Usually I work with owners of private companies and they have all the stake in it. And in fact, if I don't get the opportunity to really work with the senior leadership, I don't go in because then it won't work. They have to be committed and then they learn how to do it, learn how to allocate resources, learn how to be patient because everybody's on the same page. But otherwise, I come up against that issue all the time because that's just the world of sales. You know, it's all driven by a calendar and it not doesn't have anything to do with the buyer's calendar.
No, that's right.
So, but there are really good ways when people understand and they're going into a methodology and then it transforms their company. It really does. It's completely different.
It does. And I think through that process, if you have a sales leader or a senior leader that has the courage to say, you know what, this is just not a short-term instant gratification type approach. Mm-hmm. We're trying to set our company up for sustainable success. And in order to do that, we want to align ourselves with big organizations where we can provide great reciprocal value. Now, that doesn't mean we have to do reciprocal deals, but we want to align ourselves with the big whales because we know, to the metaphor of that being able to feed a village for a year, a big organization can feed a company for maybe many years if we do
Absolutely.
It right.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's where the harvest comes in because that's all about how do you treat them once they become your customer? Because a lot of companies don't do a good job of that. And they might get that one deal, but then they don't get the 10 or 20 years of deals that are still there.
Now, I think we know why that is, Barbara, because they're moving on to the next deal, trying to get the next caribou. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So all of that is about strategy. You know, who's responsible for that? Some companies have an account manager who's responsible for serving the account and also selling the new deals. And if it's a complex deal, you know, they're going to spend all their time putting out fires for the customer.
Yeah.
They can't be responsible for the new sales.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies just have to learn how to do that because it's just different from the kind of selling they're doing. Like when they bring me in, they've had a whale or two. They don't really know how it happened, but it did. And they want more, but they don't have a way. They don't know how to proceed. They get my book and that tries to give them a lot of good advice, but they still typically want some help implementing the program.
Yeah. Because it's not, well, you can have a methodology to follow, but because we're dealing with humans in organizations, that can actually create a lot of differences and challenges.
Oh, it does, yeah. For example, I like to see them use a team approach to work with the whale, which means that the salesperson then becomes more of an orchestrator, bringing other people in so that they can all meet their peers. Well, if you have a silo over here where this supervisor doesn't want to let people go on a sale, or people are afraid to go on a sale because they're not trained for that, all of that has to be dealt with and prepared for and practiced and rehearsed. And when it does, it's a thing of beauty. I'll tell you, it really works. It really, really works when people take it seriously.
Well, you get people on the same page, and that's, I guess, the true essence of team. So you can have individual stars on a team, but it's only when they work together that you actually get synergy and probably the multiplication factor of that as well.
For sure.
And so with the whale hunting process or system, you mentioned there's three stages or nine and nine steps. You've got the scouting, the hunting, and the harvesting.
Exactly.
I know working with a lot of organizations, and it comes back to this old adage that most sales organizations are under pressure to hit a number. And that's probably just symptomatic of the industry or the business that they're in.
Right.
Before we jump into some of the key elements of each of the three stages, what are some of the challenges that you find with big organizations? Because you said before that sometimes organizations catch a big whale and it feels fantastic, but they don't really know how they did it. That maybe, as I say, sometimes they've caught lightning in a bottle or they just happened to land in their lap.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is fantastic, but how do we do it?
Yeah.
What are some of the challenges that you find with some of these big organizations before they bring you on?
Yeah. Well, first of all, they haven't planned how much of their resource they want to allocate to whale hunting. So they have to eat along the way. You know, you can't just stop what you're doing and do something new. So yeah. They have to say, okay, we have 5 salespeople. We're going to have 1 salesperson focus on whale hunting, or we're going to do, 30% of our business is going to come from the smaller contracts, and another 30% is going to come from our real meat and potatoes, our midsize. And then we're going to allocate another 30, 40% to whale hunting. So that's step 1.
Yeah.
So everybody knows how and when the revenue should come in. And then we work on identifying the exact metrics of characteristics of companies that ought to be right for them. And then we go out in the market and find them. So we're not sending out marketing messages and seeing what comes back. We're deciding we want you and you this year, and we want these next year. So we have long-term view of the pipeline, and then we put people to work on it.
Yeah.
Really. So that's how, and if the leadership team is not down with that, it's not going to work. It has to go that way.
So that's really fascinating, because there's a lot of companies, and certainly in Australia, and I would suspect other countries as well, that almost have the hope and the pray strategy. So they'll throw things out there, they'll throw out the marketing messages and hope mm-hmm. that the marketing messages will entice customers and think, wow, we want to align, first of all, with his organization, but mm-hmm. we want what they have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
What we're saying is, from a whale hunter perspective, you've got to think about what is your whale look like? How big is your
exactly.
whale?
Yeah.
Where do they exist? And we mm-hmm. create a very, very targeted campaign for that says, yeah, and it could be, well, it's feast or famine in some cases, right? So you might say, we want to identify, and I use this term in Australia, the big, hairy, audacious goal, the big right. icon
BHAG,
account.
That we, yeah,
yeah, the big BHAG. So sure. We have never done business with this type of organization, and it's potentially mm-hmm. completely out of our comfort zone, but we're going for mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm.
So in the scouting phase, what are some mm-hmm. things that organizations need to have in place, and certainly sales leaders need to have in place, to give ourselves the opportunity to then yeah. move into the hunting phase?
Well, they definitely need a good CRM system so they can track what they're doing. And in my view, they need, I'm affiliated with the Membrane CRM. I'm a partner with them. And they have a sales enablement CRM, which I really like, that accounts for, they can have multiple sales processes inside their CRM. So they can break out their large account sales process and make it different. They also have all of their internal sales information embedded in the CRM so that the sellers, and especially the subject matter experts, can get exactly the information they need to share with the prospect at the time they need it. But you can do that with many CRMs, but you have to have visible data for everybody who's involved. Sometimes I go into a company, they'll usually have Salesforce, but they only want to have 3 seats because it's expensive, you know? And so they're not getting much out of it because half the people are blind to what's going on. So you can't orchestrate a big complex sale without data and ways to really communicate and share up-to-date information.
So just on that one, the CRM, because I know in my own experience, having worked with a lot of different CRMs, Salesforce, mm-hmm. Siebel, things like that,
mm-hmm.
The CRM seems to be only as good as the salespeople's ability or willingness mm-hmm. to put stuff into it.
Yeah.
So
yes.
From your perspective, how important, and because you've said that's the first thing in the scouting mm-hmm. phase. So mm-hmm. how important is that in terms of our ability to then eventually land a big whale?
Mm-hmm. I think it's very important, but more important than, it's not the CRM that's important. It's, is this a tool that enables salespeople to have good results? First of all, I don't believe that salespeople are the ones to do the prospecting. We have marketing people and admin people that are doing the prospecting. So we're trying to feed all this really valuable help to the sales team so they can do their thing with it. And a good CRM is going to give back to them so much more than the time they spend putting it in.
Yeah. Yeah.
if it works. Otherwise, it's not going to work. People aren't going to do it. Salespeople aren't going to do it.
Well,
sure.
they won't, and that's why I asked the question, because historically, and even the sales teams I work with today, there's almost like this begrudging acceptance they have to put stuff in there, but if they had the choice, they'd rather go out and have coffee and not
Sure,
put stuff into the
exactly. And if
CRM.
we're running into buying teams or influence teams, they're not all buyers, but you might have 6, 8, 10, a dozen people that are going to influence your sale. And you have to know who's talking to whom. If you have a team doing this, and you have to keep track of where you are. You have to not make big stupid mistakes, call the wrong person, say something that turns out to be harmful just because you didn't know where you were in the sale. So it's absolutely critical to have that information. And I think by having a CRM that can make all of the internal and external sales resources and collateral available, along with tips and content that encourages the salespeople at this step, this is what you do. And this is how you know when it's done, because this is what you need to have done before you move on. And then pretty soon, by pretty soon, I guess I mean a year to 18 months, because it takes a while to collect the data. But over time, they have a really predictable pipeline, which they've not had before. And then everybody gets on board with that. There's no more faking the pipeline.
Well, there isn't, and there's no more, let's just say, pulling the wool over sales leaders' eyes when they say, "Oh, we've got a good relationship with this person." But what they haven't done is they haven't considered all the internal advocates, detractors, influencers that we don't see in
Exactly.
the hierarchy.
So we do a lot of teaching about how to find those people, because if you're going right along, you have your internal champion, or you think it's your internal champion, and they're not bringing other people to meet you, you're in big trouble. It's
Oh,
not going
absolutely.
anywhere. Or the person will tell you, "Well, I'm in charge of this." Well, yeah, up to a point they are, but they're not really the buyer. You may never meet that buyer. Maybe you'll meet them at the end, maybe not, but the person you're talking to may not have the budget. Well, you're not going to insult them and just say, "Well, who's really got the budget for you?" You have to finesse that,
That's
Who
right.
else is going to be influenced by your decision? Things like that. So it's a real dance of human relationships.
It is, and that's where a lot of people lose a bit of patience, because they say, "Well, do we really want to stay the course?" And this is why it's so important to identify the ideal target customer and quantify what is it going to be worth to us in the midterm, but also long term, because it may not be like, if I get an account like, I don't know, BMW or Mercedes-Benz, depending on what sort of industry of them that I'm in, then that could be a lifelong relationship if we do it well.
I worked with a construction company in Florida. All of their construction took place in Florida, and they were mostly doing high-end condominiums, apartment buildings, some resorts, stuff like that. They were about a $750 million company, and they decided they wanted to move into the big resort arena. And they were up, then all of a sudden they're up against national, international developers and construction companies. So we worked with them for about a year and a half, and they went after one really big resort deal and did not get that. But the next one they did get, and that was a $300 million deal for a $750 million company. It was huge, and it propels them. Now they're on the list of companies that can do these big deals. They were already capable of it, but to persuade that kind of investment when you're small and you're not that well known, it is not easy. So we knew that who the main competitor was, and they were a very large national company with a lot of really stellar projects to their name. So we took the tack of risk mitigation, because we thought they're going to just promote all the stuff they've done and how great it is. We're going to talk about it's really hard to build on the beach. A lot of stuff can go wrong, and materials deteriorate, and you can't disturb the turtles or you'll get in trouble with the law, things like that. We just completely flipped it. And really, in my experience, people buy to avoid risk, not to gain advantage. Anything that seems to them that it's likely to work that will fit the bill is preferable to the new best thing.
And was that the key differentiator at the end? That
I believe it was, yeah. Nice. Because we could not go head to head with them on projects. We just couldn't. Yeah. We didn't have a project like that to show. And they had many.
Yeah. And then that's very easy for them to show all the bells and whistles and all the fantastic things that all the brochureware, but it
we focused more on we're smart, we're small, we're close, we know all the subcontractors, we know how to get the people. We live here, you know, we're not just sending a team in to do this. All of the things that speak risk to their leadership. And that's often a very good strategy for smaller companies.
Oh, absolutely. Because that then becomes their unique selling proposition when they're certainly going up against a big competitor.
Right.
But it also creates credibility as well.
Absolutely.
Wow. So so with that, with the scouting process, what other key things within the scouting process do we need to be conscious of? We've got the CRM, identifying knowing what our unique selling proposition is, because a lot of companies tend to, and I love your view on this, tend to compete on price, or at least they're forced into competing on price based on how their customer is behaving. Mm-hmm. How much work do we have to do up front? So taking that example of this construction company, I'm going to make an assumption that the pricing would have been okay, but they may not necessarily have been cheaper than the big competitor.
Right. I think that was, I mean, price is always important. Certainly in construction, price is always important, but I think they were typically priced in the market for whatever they did. Yes. So I think it would have been a mistake to try to undercut it. They did have a lot of, they came up with a lot of interesting ways to manage the risk of the rising cost of materials. So they put a lot of their own money on the table, really, to do a joint venture with that developer that we're not going to let these costs get out of hand. So that was another risk mitigation thing.
Nice.
I have a few methods that I teach people to stay out of that, you know, cost base situation. First of all, learn through your scouting what these companies are looking for in their partners. You know, if they always just go with the cheapest bids, just leave them alone. You know, don't go there and don't give them the benefit of your great work. There are, you know, some companies operate really differently from one another, so you can get some idea of how they operate, and you have to be really fierce about understanding your value and not backing down. I mean, one time when I was kind of early in my consulting, I had put this proposal out to a guy that I had been working with for some time. He was a very savvy CEO of his company, founder, owner, you know. And so I put the price out for him in a conversation, and he said, "Well, is that the best you can do?" And I said, "Well, you know, you invited me here to teach your team how to be whale hunters. And if the first thing I do is cut my price, then you shouldn't hire me." And he said, "Well, you know, it's my job to ask."
Yep.
And I hadn't thought about that before, but it is his job to ask. And it's my job to say, you know, what part of this shall we not do?
Yeah.
You know, exactly. You can always negotiate, but I think it's a terrible idea to just discount. It's terrible. It's an endless spiral down.
Oh, Barbara, it's so true, because there can only be one cheapest price, one cheapest provider.
Yeah.
And you end up in many cases getting what you pay for.
Oh, yeah. I think you always get what you pay for, almost always. Yeah.
And in that little exercise there, teaching, if you're going to come in and teach his sales team about a buying methodology or selling methodology, their customers are going to ask that question.
Of course.
They need to be able to stand their ground and say, you know what? Our method is we don't discount. We are, let's turn the conversation from pricing and discount into value, which means, and it sounds like what you're talking about in the scouting process, know what your customer's buying criteria is. What are they looking for? What's important to them?
Exactly. And then there are different versions of that because different people are involved in the decision. So if the highest level person really wants this, but the other people don't want it, they're not going to do it. It's too much hassle. So, you know, legal people want one thing. IT people want everything.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, you know, you have to meet various needs. And we do a lot of work. One of my most fun things to do with clients is the whole concept of stop scaring whales.
Mm-hmm.
Whales are afraid of you. They're afraid of you because you're small. They're afraid of you because they don't know you. You don't do things the way they do. They don't know where your town is. Everything about you scares them. They're afraid of more work. They're afraid of making a mistake, terribly afraid of making a mistake, afraid of internal conflict. So we have a whole range of tools and worksheets and planners that we do to figure out why are they going to be afraid of us and how are we going to mitigate that fear and when are we going to introduce that into the conversation?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really powerful. Powerful.
And as you were talking there, I'm thinking, I'm just putting myself in shoes of sales directors that I've worked with and thinking, man, guys, we don't have time for this. We need to hit our number. But it's the work that has to be done because in order to land these big deals, we almost have to be part of their ecosystem. We have to understand what is it that they're afraid of? Why are they trying to avoid mistake? Mm-hmm. What is the internal conflict that they might be experiencing? So that we might have a CEO who loves us, but we've got a support team or a direct report team to the CEO who don't because they don't understand because it's for whatever reason. It's
So it has to be aligned through the whole organization. You can't have CEO leaning on the sales leader to close short-term business if they're on a whale hunting track. They need to have that all sorted out and they need to have really good communications amongst the whole leadership team. Another really important piece of this that I think sales leaders come to really benefit from and really appreciate is in all of the sales processes that we help people design, there is always a go, no-go decision point on a whale. And you have to be somewhat down into that deal. And as a sales team, you have to convince either the sales leader or the executive team that you can close this deal. And there are certain criteria that teams come up with to do that. And so it takes that decision out of the hands of an individual salesperson or even maybe an individual sales leader, because we can't bring in three or four whales at a time, you know, and it's very expensive to hunt them. So we use this term back to Baja because the whales migrate. And so if this isn't the right time for you, we're sending it back to Baja and we go after it another year. But all those little things fit into whether it's going to be successful. That's why it has to be a whole company responsibility.
And that's a really good point, the go or no go, because how many company, and I'll ask you this question based on the years that you've been working in the industry, how many companies almost go past the go, no go, but they choose not to say no, they choose to say go.
All of them.
And it costs them in the end.
Yeah. No, that's sales. I mean, people, that's what they want to do. I had a customer, they had a term, they call it DNDD. It was a darn near done deal. They had one that had been on their books for years that they still spoke about. So they got a big kick out of the go, no go decision.
It's getting closer and closer. I reckon we'll do it this quarter.
Exactly. It's so costly. It's demoralizing, it's costly, and it makes you look foolish in the marketplace too to do that.
Well, it does, and it does provide reputational damage potentially if it's there for too long. And as organizations, we have to make the hard decision to say at what point do we feel that this is not a viable business for both parties, and we'll just call it.
And so you have criteria that you use to decide initially, and then you have more criteria that you discover as the sales team begins working with them, and then you have to make hard calls on that, because if you don't, you can be overwhelmed. You can be just as overwhelmed if you sell two whale deals when you should have just sold one, because you can't handle them, you know?
Because it
I've
does
been
take
in
a lot of
companies
resource.
where, I'm sorry.
Because it does take a lot of resource, doesn't it?
I've been in companies where the operations people are pushing those whales off the shore, you know? Thank you very much. We have enough to do. We don't need any more business like this. So everybody has to be, you know, have the opportunity to be on the same page. Not everybody will get on the same page, but they have to have the opportunity to be part of it.
And so when you migrate into the hunting phase, I'm just curious, when you, because I suspect there wouldn't be a definitive period of time that you're in the scouting phase, because every company would be different. And as we go through the scouting process, we probably find out more information about the organization of the whale, but probably more information about whether we as an organization actually have the capability to be able to land this, right? So,
So scouting, when you're first starting out, scouting is a big piece, and then it kind of sorts itself out, and it's a more of a maintenance thing ongoing, but it's a big lift at first.
So that was what I was going to ask you. So it's not a definitive, hey, we've finished now the scouting phase, now we're into the hunting phase. So it's like a yin and yang, if you like, a
And we're building a dossier. It's a digital dossier. You know, it's not a file that gets stuck on the shelf, but we're always gathering information. We're trying to get information from everyone who's involved, so everybody knows what's going on and what they should be talking about with people. And you're right, it doesn't, we don't define it by a period of time. We define it about how long does it take to accomplish these things. And when we've accomplished these things, then we know we're done. And so we think that every phase is equally important. The scouting phase is just as important as the closing phase. You know, everybody wants to ring the bell and celebrate the close, which is great, but that's not the only important part of it.
No, it's and as a person who's experienced that, it's not the most exciting part. I mean, it's great, you get a hit of dopamine, but you actually realize that it was all the phases before that that the real satisfaction came from.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, Barbara, in the hunting phase, what are some key things that the wild hunters need to really focus in on to give themselves every opportunity of landing the big whale?
They need to find the people who are going to influence the sale. So they need to probably get to know a number of people in the company and find, you know, the person we usually talk about as the champion. Can you find a person who's willing to introduce you to other people and be a convener? Because a lot of times, depending on what they're buying, these people don't even know each other. You know, they've been kind of put together because this is something that somebody needs and you have a piece of it. And they need the salesperson to lead them through the right way to do it. They're not deliberately trying to cause you trouble. They don't know. And so I'm a little skeptical about the buyer's journey, that whole concept. I know there is a journey, but I'm not sure they know they're on it a lot of times when they're buying. So I think they look to salespeople as trusted advisors. That's what they want, trusted advisors, and they trust that you've done this before and you know the best way to help them go about reaching a good decision. So that's important. Communication is critically important. And really listening to what it is they want or need. A lot of times they don't know. They know they have a problem, but there could be so many different ways to solve it. They don't, it's not like they're necessarily choosing three companies like you, you know. Like for me with whale hunting, I'm a consulting training company. They could go to a big, massive international consulting firm, they could go to a sales training company, you know, they could do online learning. There's so many things they can do. that they don't know that whale hunting is an answer for them, you know?
That's
so
right.
And I like to approach it. I don't know if whale hunting is the answer for them either, but I want to help them figure out what the answer is.
Yeah.
I don't want to go in there on a pretense that I can help them when I can't. That's bad for them, and it's really bad for me.
Yeah, but if you go into that organization and upon speaking with them or spending some time with them, realize that what they don't need is a whale hunter. What they need is some spears, because all they're interested in is caribou, then
right, exactly.
No point trying to fit that into something that doesn't.
That's so true. I mean, that's again part of being able and willing to say no. That's just important to say no as to say yes. Offer them what, you know, if you want to be a trusted advisor, be a real advisor. You know, tell them really what you think, what you believe, and don't pander to them, and don't try to fit your stuff into their world if you don't see it there. So you need to learn a lot. You need to listen a lot.
So with that, question just popped into my head around that in terms of how many organizations that you've worked with go through, say, the scouting phase, and they've identified what they think is a big whale that they want to align with and go to. And then they get through the hunting phase and they start to do all the analysis, trying to work out who are the key decision makers, who influences who. And through that process, they actually realize that, you know what, this is not the customer that we want. It's not, they actually, it isn't the opportunity that we thought it was.
Yeah.
But the question is, if they've spent so much time and resource getting to this phase, how many companies have the courage to say, you know what, it's the go or no go now. It's no, versus how many push forward to say, we've invested too much up until this point?
You know, usually the companies that I work with, they stick with the plan because they understand that what they're learning through that process is going to be so much more valuable down the road. The opportunities for them, again, I'm working very, very often with privately held companies.
Okay.
It's their own money, you know, it's their own life, it's their own legacy to their children. And once they make a commitment, men or women, they're very willing to. I don't have a lot of people who won't do it after they commit to start. I meet a lot of people that just don't want to commit to starting, but most of them have been very successful when they've made that commitment to do it, because it's a big picture and they see that it's sensible.
Yes. And presumably they've done the qualification, that they've identified what their ideal big customer, big whale looks like, and they've got a view of that. So,
and we help a lot with that too, because a lot of times they're even sometimes going into a different market as they're doing this growth. And so Australia is a big company. I would say to any Australia company, if you're going to start whale hunting on something, you know, do it in one city, do it in the east or the west or the south or whatever. Don't just go everywhere. It costs you a fortune and you won't build a reputation. So I like to start with a niche, build a reputation there, and then move out. So that's a criterion. Not that we're never going to move out of New South Wales, but we're not going to go to Europe this year. Just sensible things like that.
Well, and the other thing that I heard you say without you saying it is, if you get really clear on what that whale is and focus on that and put all your resources in and get that deal, it probably attracts other whales that are in a similar industry that also want a piece of what their competitor, what they see you're doing for that organization.
Absolutely. That's completely true. And a lot of these people know each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They're in the same industry. They go to the same meetings. So you can build a reputation that way, but it's harder to do that if you're geographically too spread out again.
Yeah, that's right. Even though we've got Zoom and Teams and things like that, you sometimes need to still press the flesh, for a better term.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So some other key insights then in the hunting phase. So we've talked about we need to identify who the people are that will influence internal, so all the internal key stakeholders.
Right.
Some other key things that perhaps you see some companies miss, if you like, in this phase.
Yeah. Couple things they miss. They miss the opportunity to bring their senior leadership into the sale at key moments. And they also are not, sometimes they're afraid to do that because they're afraid to talk to the CEO about how he or she should behave in that kind of meeting. But if you're small and you're dealing with a big company, part of your authority comes from your CEO, your banker, you know, you want to, I always use the term be a peer. When I was first starting out in this, and I, you know, I don't have a sales background, I have an academic background. So I'd use my academic background, you know, and I always try to feel like I can be a peer to anybody, you know, but, and I think most salespeople feel that because it's a kind of confidence, but you have to school yourself to do that because you know, you're not, you're not a peer in their domain, you know, but you're a peer as far as being a valuable person and you have something to say, but it's not for the faint of heart. You have to try to see things their way and behave in ways that they're expecting. Like small companies don't have a lot of processes written down and big companies have everything written down. So they expect that you're going to have a particular plan to how to bring them on board, for example, a simple thing like that. We do so much work with that. And, you know, the other big thing in the hunt process is the proposal.
Yeah.
How you're going to present it and what the written proposal looks like and who's going to be involved and when you're going to talk about the price and if you're going to get to do an in-person or, you know, group kind of meeting on Zoom. How do you manage that? Because a lot of that can go really south really fast.
It can. And particularly when you've got multiple key stakeholders who are part of the presentation of the proposal, that they might go off on their own agenda and say things that perhaps they shouldn't at that time.
We do a whole lot of rehearsal. We really insist on a lot of rehearsals before these big presentations and, you know, try to really orchestrate it so that go through the kind of murder board, you know, what are the questions that, you know, they're going to ask that you wish you wouldn't and who's going to answer that question? Because sometimes just stumbling over that is a big mistake.
Yeah.
If you know, they're going to ask you something, you don't have a good answer or they're not going to like your answer. Somebody has to be prepared to take that on. You can't just go in there and hope it doesn't happen. So it takes really good rehearsal.
It does. Question I did want to ask you on the proposal phase, and I know that you are a great writer and you do a lot of freelance as well and ghostwriting. Based on how much work do you put into educating the sales team and the organization when they put a proposal together to use language that is going to resonate with the customer? Because my experience for organizations, and I don't know whether this is just generational, it's conditioning, they tend to talk more about their own company
in any
proposal
yeah.
than the customer.
Yeah. Well, any thoughts that's where that? I have a huge advantage there. I mean, it took me a while to realize, but actually my background in writing has been extremely useful to me in the sales world. And when I'm working with the customer, I'm right in there on that proposal. I'm rewriting it, you know, I'm coaching them. And especially if they're doing formal RFPs, I have an alignment now with a company called Loopio.com, which is an AI assisted RFP proposal tool that allows you to do collaborative proposals. And so we take care of a lot of that using new tools.
Nice. Because you've got to make it about the customer, not about so in the hunting phase, is the proposal, the demonstration, the meetings, do we have obviously, well, maybe it's not obvious, but is the closing phase also included in the hunting phase, or does that sort of transition into the harvest?
Closing is part of the hunt, and then the actual maybe contract negotiations spill over into harvest. You know, you might have an agreement, but there's a lot of stuff that has to be worked out on paper. And it's, of course, again, it's harder for smaller independent companies to deal with that because you're used to having your contract on your own paper, as they say. Big companies, they have their paper, they have their lawyers. You're going to deal with people that you've never met before, and they don't care what it is you want. This is their paper, and it's going to have to be like that. So
it's
that's another
agreements.
Thing that, yeah, it's another thing that you have to learn. How much are you willing to give? If you're not willing to give, you can still lose a deal like that.
Yeah. And so when you close that, when you've got agreement and we move into the harvest, because I often say to sales teams that if you understand this concept that the sale actually doesn't start until after the sale is made, you'll now have a much better opportunity to build a longer term relationship with your customer, because you'll work harder after the transaction than perhaps you did before the transaction.
Sure.
So for these big deals, obviously there's big teams that are involved. And if an organization has thrown a big group at a big whale, what happens in the harvest phase? Do they then become part of the post-sale operational team to deliver, maintain? Or do organizations now say, right, this team, you're now on to the next big whale? How important is the harvest phase?
It's critically important. The most important part of it is to have a very detailed onboarding plan. And we share that with the customer during the end of the hunting phase. You know, if you choose to come with us, this is what'll happen. This is how we'll handle bringing you on board in a way that satisfies everybody, because we know we're going to be working with different people. Some of the same, but lots of new people, and we'll be introducing new people to you. So that's a big piece of what we do, helping them to actually design a project management tool for bringing a new customer on board. And then usually I find that the ideal thing is to have a sales leader and an account manager consistently on that team, at least for a period of time. And the biggest opportunity for the sales leader is then to be in communication with the people that are delivering the work, because they're going to be the insiders that have the real information going forward. And not many companies are very good at that. They may have a whole team of people on site in this other company, and they're not talking to them about what they're learning, what's the gossip, you know, what's going on there.
Yeah, it's such a good point, because I've seen so many deals fall over in the implementation phase, and the experience that was promised is not matched by the experience that is experienced.
So true, especially in technology.
Yeah.
Especially in technology, because you have a development team that they've created this new tool. Say it's a new AI tool. Okay, that's what they're doing today. And right now, it fits in this box. This is what it does. And someday it's going to do this and this and this and this. But right now it does this. The sales team understands what it's going to do, and they go sell that. And
that's
so
it.
There's a big gap, or they won't allow the implementation people to get close enough to the customer in order to really plan how to deliver what they really want. It's a huge problem.
I love that. I love that, because that is a problem that I see a lot. That is that there are certain individuals, and sometimes it's the sales account manager, sometimes it's the customer success manager, who wants to own the relationship. And they almost choose to who can and who can't liaise with the customer, versus what we're saying is, it should be a whole enterprise sort of approach, so that when a customer is dealing with our organization, the messaging should be very similar and the experience should be exceptional.
Yeah. And it's management driven.
Yes.
And management controls how this works.
100%. 100%. So we're just about out of time. I'm conscious of your time as well. Any other key, I guess, tips for people who are listening to this, who maybe are in the B2B space looking for their own version of a big whale, a big account? Any other key tips we can leave the listeners with that we haven't covered in relation to either of the phases?
Well, I think you've really covered a lot. I mean, the keys are good leadership, no substitute for leadership being on board, communication, collaboration, planning. I mean, those are the keys. It's nothing. We usually say that whale hunting is 90% process and 10% magic. There's a little bit of magic in there, but mostly it's process.
Well, it is process, and maybe the magic is the whale has to appear.
Exactly. Yeah. And if I could just take a minute of time to tell you about the Whale Hunters Institute and invite people to check that out. This is, we've put together all of our learnings, all of our knowledge base about whale hunting, the books, the courses, the tools, everything into what we call the Whale Hunters Institute, which is an online membership association where sales individuals and sales teams can come to learn together, reinforce what they already know about large account sales, learn new things. And the highlight of it is an AI version of me as your sales coach. So I have a clone called Barbara AI that pretty much has learned what I know, at least what I've ever put in writing, and acts as a coach to people that are taking classes or communicating with one another, learning whale hunting in the Institute.
Amazing. And where do people, because I was going to ask you as we wrap, where do people get access to that and where do people connect with you?
They can go to thewhalehunters.com and they'll find the Institute there and they'll find contact for me, or they can find me, email Barbara@thewhalehunters.com.
Nice. Brilliant.
Barbara, we're going to, one other thing in that Institute, we're having weekly live conversations, coaching sessions with people. And there will be a session every week that's in your time zone for morning time.
Nice. Because I do know you're doing some work with Australian companies. So that'll be fantastic.
Exactly.
So Barbara, absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. I've loved it.
It's been fantastic. I'll put that information in the show notes and let's see if we can increase the opportunities for Australian business and global businesses to go out and hunt what they think is the big whale for them. Yeah. So absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise. Thanks so much, Darren.
All the best. Thank you for listening to the Exceptional Sales Leader Podcast. I trust the information in this episode has been helpful in your journey towards becoming exceptional. And remember, please take the time to rate the show, subscribe to the show so other people can find it. But also, if I can help you, jump on my calendar, go to leadwithdarren.com and let's have a conversation about how I can help you along your journey to being exceptional.